In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
So we got some players back, and that's nice. Jed Wills, I got more on him coming up at 7:20, but you also got Jack Conklin back. More on him coming up at 7:20. I don't want to spoil and give away what we can sell here. But being able to bring back some of the other players that they talked about yesterday and that media availability, you know, Greg Newsome II is big. Dalvin Tomlinson is big. You know, DeAnthony Bell, I'm not sure where they're going to go on him because they waived 16 guys. They got to get it down to 53. I know Daryl had mentioned DeAnthony Bell yesterday as being on a bubble because there had been no availability before. I know they really, really like DeAnthony Bell, but he's an unspoken about player. And Miles Harden has had a chance to shine, just like Cam Mitchell had a chance to shine last year. So there is a big talking point here over the final, less than 12 hours of who they hold on to and who they don't. We haven't even got to DTR and Tyler Huntley yet, which a argument has broken out over line. I didn't think that a lot of people would want to get in on something like that of DTR and Tyler Huntley, but a big argument has kind of broken out online, and I think I'd like to get to more of that coming up at 8 o'clock.
But I think after last year, that argument definitely matters because now you don't want what happened last year in terms of the quarterback situation to happen again. But when you go through a year, even as successful as it was for the Browns, and you play 5 different starting quarterbacks, I hate to say it, but who you keep as your third quarterback in this situation matters.
Yeah.
It is a conversation that you don't want to matter. You don't want this outcome to affect any games, but it very well could. It's something that does matter.
There you go.
Countdown to the season opener brought to you by Genesee Brewing Company and Circa Resorts and Casino.
See, you brought up the putting each other in bad positions. I think that Kevin broke his own rule there. And I want to get back to the Guardians coming up here momentarily. But just to finish up on what you had said, I think Danny Cunningham in for Lima today. I don't think that I don't know if they put each other in a bad position in terms of, hey, once you go out there and play, if you play well, people aren't going to care about it. But I think there is genuine logical concern about he doesn't start seasons off well. This all tends to go well. But I'm telling you, I'm not laying – when we say that he doesn't start seasons off well, I'm not going to sit there and lay the groundwork for some sort of an excuse. What's done is done. It's year three. We got to figure out what he's going to do in year three. My issue is that Kevin essentially broke his own rule where he doesn't tell anybody anything about anything. And then that day against Minnesota, for whatever reason – he broke his own rule of telling people while he was going to play. If he had just remained quiet about it, would there have been a difference? And I think there would have been a difference there because you give yourself time to react to certain things. And you could always say in the hindsight, you know, our plan all along was to play Deshaun in game 3 against Seattle, and then things changed. Because now I think it's opened up this can of worms here. Of does Deshaun really want to play? Does Deshaun really like football? Does he really like being here? And because there are some people who are definitely against him, I think that there's a lot of questions about whether or not that's true. I was answering him online yesterday where I had said flat out, I believe in my heart of hearts, by anybody I've talked to, by seeing him from afar, that if he had the chance to play last Saturday, he would have played last Saturday. And that he does want to play, and that he believes he's healthy enough to play. And obviously, he was passed by the doctors for cleared for contact. All that being pointed out, and if he goes out there and he sucks up the room against Dallas, You have every right to go at me if I make an excuse for him. There cannot be an excuse for him after this. That's all there is.
No, he needs to go out there and perform, because the truth of it is he's been incredibly, I think, underwhelming in the 12 games that he's played for the Browns.
I think a lot of people would agree with that, yes.
I don't think that he's been worth the money. I don't think he's been worth the trouble. I don't think he's been worth some of the fracturing of the fan base that he's caused. He needs to go out there and perform and play like a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback. I don't see a precedent in NFL history of a guy that's played 12 games over 3 years, had surgery on his throwing shoulder, and then become a Pro Bowl quarterback again. It's never happened before, mm-hmm. from what I can gather. Why is Deshaun Watson going to be the first? That's the question we should be asking ourselves. So having a little bit of confidence in him being able to go out, and even if he's not a Pro Bowl quarterback, you and I could probably agree the Browns, to get to where the Browns want to go, need Deshaun Watson to be, at the very worst, an above-average quarterback this year, right?
Yeah.
I need to see something that's going to make me believe that's possible, because right now I don't. I don't have any evidence of him in an orange helmet since he was at Clemson performing at this type of level. I don't.
Well, it's been a long time.
It's a problem.
So, but you're not going to get any evidence until you get to the season.
Right.
So, but some people, I brought this up yesterday with Spencer, is that people wanted to see him just so they could start to self-affirm whatever belief that they had, that he was going to be fantastic this year or he was going to be terrible this year. That's still not the reason to put him out there on the field in real time. Just because we wanted to have our talking points with our friends, because the fan base is fractured between people who like Deshaun Watson and people who don't believe that he's a good quarterback, this preseason is not going to add to the talking point in any considerable way. Week one against Dallas will start to add to the talking points, good or bad, in any considerable way, because of everything that's going around it. Tom Brady's going to be there. We've mentioned it a million times. And you're going up against a guy in Dak Prescott who's one of the most famous quarterbacks in the league, and a guy that a lot of people think is not worth his money, is not worth the type of franchise status that he has. And there's plenty of people who think that those people are completely full of it, overthinking all that, maybe including Jerry Jones. So there is a lot of intrigue when it comes to both these quarterbacks. He will be a talking point no matter what. There's nowhere to hide after week one. There's nowhere to go. Even if you get injured, I can't say anymore, well, you know, it's stolen because of injuries. No, it's been 3 years now, and you've been injured two of those three. If it were to go down that way, we're going to draw our conclusions then, and then you'd be a fifth year away, mm-hmm. from what was glorious football in 2020. There's no way that we can make excuses anymore.
No.
You is what you is, and if you is a good quarterback, we'll say you is a good quarterback. If not, then there's going to be a really deep discussion and an angry one and a frustrating one.
So I said this on Saturday. I was in for G. Bush on the Barbershop, and the regular season with Deshaun is going to be about results. That's what regular seasons are about in this league. Preseason, to me, is kind of about, like, vibes, if that makes sense. Where the Browns went 0-3, but who cares? It's about how do you feel, what are the vibes of the team? And because of everything we've talked about, the vibes feel weird. Yes. Now, the results can still be good, and that'll totally change everything. But going into the regular season, I feel very weird about this team.
Well, I think the vibes are down throughout the city right now.
Because of the Guardians?
I think everything. Not just the Guardians, and I wanted to get to them, and I'm glad you did. It's not just the Guardians. It's everything. You have a basketball team that's reached new heights, but the heights aren't high enough yet. And that you have a guy in Donovan Mitchell that's a really great basketball player, but I got Bleacher Report giving a higher grade to Utah than they're giving to the Cavs.
So dumb.
Well, I had a big knockdown drag out with Lime over it, and you know what side I was on it. Either way, that's beside the point.
Yeah.
That's beside the point. I'm just highlighting that.
No,
people see that sort of thing, and I think it dours them out. The Guardians being up 9 games and then being in the situation they are. The Browns being a playoff team, but no one's taking them dramatically seriously because they don't know what their quarterback's going to be. That's a bothersome thing. So I think the vibes right now for the sports fans, where we like to get cocky, we like to get arrogant, we like to talk a lot of trash, just like any other fan base. We're not getting that fun the way that we used to get it. It's a very weird place that we're all in right now with all three of these teams. And you mentioned the Guardians. When you have a 9-game lead, I still think at that time that there were some people waiting for it to be turned in. And then yesterday, I just can't get over the answer that Stephen Vogt gave to Zach Meisel from The Athletic when Zach Meisel asked him about leaving Eli Morgan out there for that third inning.
You said after the first game that was how you wanted to deploy your pitching kind of drew up. Is that the same with the second game? Like when you go into game one, is this what you're envisioning?
I mean, you can't envision game two until you get through game one. Game one, we went with what we thought was going to help us win the game. We didn't come out on top. And then in game two, we had what we had.
Do you remember when...
I mean, that's garbage. I'm sorry, guys. All right, go ahead.
Do you remember when Austin Hedges made comments earlier in the season about how they treat every game like it's a playoff game?
Yeah.
Do you think they're still doing that? And if so, do you think that's part of the reason...
Why would you leave Eli Morgan out there if you were treating every game like a playoff game?
But if they are still doing that in terms of the guys in the clubhouse, because I don't think he was talking about Steven Vogt's decision-making with that. I think he was talking about the mentality of the guys that are in the lineup that are on the bench, in the bullpen. If they are still like that, if that is still truly the mentality they have, do you think that's something that's harming them right now that has caused this backslide? Because... hey, if you are truly treating all 162 of these like they're playoff games, the losses are going to hurt more. You're going to have higher peaks, but you're going to have lower valleys. And those lower valleys are going to be more difficult to get out of if these games hurt the same way a playoff loss does.
I think that there's something to that, and that's something that my co-host has said in the past. I thought it helped them because I felt that it didn't let them take anything for granted. I felt that it didn't let them go to sleep on anything. I thought it helped them get out of a losing streak and help negate losing streaks as best they can. Now I do think that they're pressing. I'm not upset with their effort. I'm frustrated by what's gone on here over the last couple of weeks. I'm frustrated that there's been sputtering going on and that the offense has not been what we needed the offense to be. I'm frustrated by all that. I'm frustrated because there's been a lot of people who are naysaying, and it's looking more and more like those folks are going to be right. That's another thing I'm frustrated at. And because of that, I think I'm taking out some of my frustration on the organization, on the front office, and certainly on the manager, Steven Vogt, for that. But when you say that you approach every game the same way and that you can't get to the second game after you get to game one, but you run Eli Morgan out there for a third inning, I'm sorry, you're not telling me about any of that. You're telling me with your actions that you're approaching game two already while you're still in game one and still in the thick of game one, for that matter.
Do you feel bad about taking those frustrations out on the organization?
No. Okay. I think that they can handle it. The only people I would feel bad for are the people who have no control over such matters. I also don't feel like I think there's a separation here. I'm not taking my frustration out on the players. They are pressing. And that's the most frustrating part about it, is that I think a lot of fans are mad, but the only way to get yourself out of this thing is if these players relax and play the baseball with confidence that they were playing back in June. That's the issue that I think a lot of people have with them. He's coming up at 9:00. I want to be calmed down by Todd Derry. Oh, by the way, Urban Meyer, vaunted Jacksonville Jaguars coach, joining Afternoon Drive coming up at 3 p.m. today. 216-474-0092. Will Todd talk people off the ledge, or is he going to fan the flames of what's been going on over the last month and a half, 2 months, where you've gone from a 9-game lead to a 1-game lead, and a lot of it hasn't looked good. And the only thing I can say, it's not that they've been disinterested. It's not that they've been lazy. They've not been stupid. It's none of that. I feel like I'm talking about a youth team. They've been pressing. They are pressing.
Right.
When's the last? I can't tell you
last
time.
Are you trying to tell me that they got a lead too early in the division?
I do think there's something to they peaked too soon. I won't say the division they got a lead too early. And listen, for as much panic as I feel as I have, is that I might be inducing with people, there is still a month of the season left. Expect it to go well, but to be fair, you have to see how it plays out.
But you watch these games like a hawk, all right?
Well, and if Ken put the Iggy on them this morning.
What did I do?
You can go ahead and say it again if you want. You don't think they're winning the division? You don't think they're making the playoffs? I don't remember what you said.
Yeah, that's true. I think that they're, because they're pressing.
Said that in the first segment this morning.
Because they're pressing. Because they're pressing, yes.
So do you think they're going to miss the playoffs entirely?
No. I've dialed it back a little bit. I was upset this morning, and I'm not upset with the players, damn it. I'm upset Why is Stephen Vogt doing what he's doing with some of these decisions? I mean, the last month,
I don't know.
There has been several head-scratching decisions. Okay, yeah, but at what point do we have to take away the rookie thing and go, hey, man, you're the manager of a team that's supposed to win the division now and go to the playoffs?
I get where you go. He's went 100-something games, so he's not a rookie anymore. It's also his first time at this point in a season where he's had a lead, and he's got to protect that lead. But, and believe me, I was hot on the team this morning, too.
Exactly.
And I'm still hot on the team.
See, that's the thing.
But at the same time, I can't go, these are new scenarios. These are the first times for these things where you're protecting leads.
Owen, that's your reaction right there is exactly part of the thing I'm talking about. You were hot this morning, and now you're like, Ken, I think you're being a little too unfair to Stephen Vogt.
No, I'm still hot about it. Stop losing games, Stevie.
Like, move Josh Naylor down in the lineup, Steve.
Well, that's what I wanted to bring up. I didn't get to see Friday.
Don't put
or Saturday.
Tyler Freeman at shortstop, Steve.
Don't try and get nine outs from Eli Morgan, Steve.
I got to see a little bit of the Yankees.
The Lane Thomas thing, Steve.
On Thursday, I didn't get to see Texas on Friday or Saturday for obvious reasons. I was way out there. Sunday, I saw a little bit of it. Did Josh Naylor have any good at bats through any of that time that
Josh
I missed?
Josh Naylor hasn't had a good at bat since the All-Star game.
So he's been even swinging his hits, out of his shoes since the All-Star game.
Even the couple times he's come up big, they've not been good at bats. I mean, there was an instance, I think it was in, I don't remember if it was Wednesday or Thursday last week, but they had a guy on second, 1-0 count, down a run, swings at the first pitch, fouls out to the first baseman. Like, that is the kind of thing that feels to me like has happened 75 times since the All-Star break. Every time he comes up in a big spot, and even when there was a game where he had a single up the middle late, that it was a 3-0 pitch, it was a couple weeks ago. He should not be in the position where he is. He should not have the green light on a 3-0 count right now. And he hits a weak chopper, and off the bat, I'm like, well, that's a ground out to the second baseman. And because of the way the defense was aligned, it was a base hit. But that was luck, not because he actually did something good. The good things he's done have not been because he's performed really well. They've been at some time. Sometimes in this game, you get lucky.
If he's pressing, and I kind of even want to ask the listeners this, 216-474-0092, if he's pressing, then is moving him down in the lineup going to help him? Does it take pressure off him? Does it help him relax? Or does it make him ratchet up more because he's being moved down in the lineup?
I don't know that it helps him.
I have to defend Stephen Vogt on that front because I don't have all the information yet.
Okay, is it about helping Josh Naylor or is it about helping the team? Does moving him down in the lineup help him? I don't know. It might not. But you know what it might do?
He's one of the few guys that can hit a home run in my lineup here. And if I take away that confidence and he's still swinging out of his shoes, then I'm really going to have a big problem later on in the lineup there. And then I might lose him for the rest of the season. He's been great for the most of the year. But, man, I can't remember the last good at-bat he's had.
He's one of the few guys that can hit a home run, I guess. But he's also the guy that's going to get out more than anybody else. Would you rather, okay, one out of every 45 at-bats, he can hit a home run. We're going to hope that's today. But for the other 44, he's going to get out 41 times. Would you rather have that hitting fourth, or would you rather have him seventh and someone else that's more consistent hitting fourth? The other thing, I wonder if he's hurt. I wonder if he's all the way healthy. I don't know if he's pressing. He might be somebody that's trying to play through an injury. I think that is a very real possibility.
216-474-0092. That is a possibility as well, and they never tell you about the injuries over there.
Well, especially this organization.
Yeah, Matt in Uniontown, you're next up on the Fan. Hello, Matt.
Hello. Yeah, I think the majority of this is on the front office. Just the way that they acted from midseason last year, where they had no intention of, you know, they did the white flag trade. I was around, you know, remember the old White Sox white flag trade. They thought they couldn't compete, you know, and they were still July.
Yes.
Just a game back. They did the same thing last year. And now, going into this year, they had no intention of doing anything. Their best-case scenario was to have Bieber pitch well and trade him for a lot of picks, have Lively pitch well, trade him for stock. And they had no intention of doing anything.
I can't disagree.
Their worst nightmare was them actually being good this year. Then they're like, oh.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. In
thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey. Yeah.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Oh my God. This totally screws everything up that they're good, which sounds totally crazy, but that's exactly what happened. And now we're seeing the fallout from it. They did absolutely nothing to trade. They did just enough to maybe appease a few people, but what we did was less than others. So we actually took a step backwards.
Matt, go ahead.
Oh yeah. So like I said, it's the worst case scenario for the front office happened this year, and which is unfortunate because it's actually having them win. So that's what's so frustrating in this whole thing, that they could have went out and got some guys. They could have went out and got Jazz Chisholm. He had that extra year than Lane Thomas anyway. Maybe it would have cost them a little bit extra of a few extra middle infielders that we have that are slappies that we don't really need anyway.
We'd only have 14 shortstops then.
And it does.
And none of them are good.
And it does, it does, Matt. It adds in because you think about last year as well. If they would have been like, I picked them at 82-80 this year, right? That would have been a good, okay, you're back up over 500, then you could start to build upon that. But instead, you're way out ahead. But it's still the perfect mix of what happened last year. Last year, you were what, two games out when you sold at the trade deadline?
Right,
two games
there.
Out. And what were people, Matt? They were mad, right? And I couldn't defend, I really couldn't defend what they were doing, even though that they were, I think we all knew in our heart of hearts they weren't going to do anything great, but they still sold, and that made the fans upset. Then you get to this time where, yeah, they're 75-57, but there's no 100-win team this year. There's no team that's just going to run away with the conference, with the league or the division. So you say, why didn't you go make more moves? And then guys like me have lined up, Matt, and said, well, some of the other guys aren't moving. And you could say, I don't care. Go ahead and offer more and get those guys. So we're going in a circle here, but it's true. It's frustrating.
And even going back to last year, what made last year frustrating was that they got, oh, you've got the Dodgers, you got the Orioles, you got these all major, huge teams. We can't compete against them. Well, what happened? They all choked at the end, and the Texas Rangers snuck in. There's no saying that the Indians, if they would have made a few more moves last year, but I do agree, definitely didn't have the team last year as they have this year. That's why it makes this year even more frustrating, because they were definitely in a position to make some moves that they could have at least shown the team. And I think Vogt, you know, he overachieved, and as well as the team. You're saying the team is pressing a little bit.
I do.
I believe that they overachieved, and you know they got to where they needed to be, and they needed a few reinforcements to help them out a bit. Then you could drop Naylor a little bit lower, and if you would have got a bigger bat at the deadline,
Matt.
But now you're kind of stuck right now. I mean, there's guys out there on waivers, and mm-hmm. you know Drew Smyly was just put on waivers. We could use some pitching help, but the problem is we're kind of high on the waiver priority list. Those guys are getting snatched up before we hit them. We could have even gotten what's the shortstop we had last? Rosario got picked by the Cincinnati Reds.
Yes, he did.
They were higher waiver priority. You know, guys like that, we could be getting off of waivers, but we're kind of stuck now because we didn't. You know, we have too good of a record.
Well, we have a, and Matt, thank you for the call. I mean, we have a collection of shortstops. Go ahead and take your pick. Middle infielders as well. I'm not sure how to remedy that right now. I think your remedy probably comes at some point mid-season next year when you move Jimenez over to shortstop and eventually bring Bazan up, because it looks like he's going to be ready on time in about June, the way that Zach Meisel had thought about it. Well, he speculated on it.
Hopefully.
He didn't guarantee
you hope
it
for that.
But it looks like the young man's going to be ready sometime by midsummer next year. But you have to hope that you're out to the same type of lead that you were again this last year, or you're right there in the thick of everything as well. Will, where are you calling from, Will?
I'm going down to Columbus City. I'm in the car.
Oh, okay. He's on a car phone, not car bone. All right, Will, go ahead.
Will, man.
Like, I don't know every city in Ohio, even though I'm from here and I've been on the air here a long time now. I'm going, where the hell is car bone? Said car phone. No. Nicely produced, Mitch. Will, go ahead.
Sometimes you drive a Trom.
So I think we have like a situation with the Browns where the fan base hated the coach because, you know, of the talent and this and that. Just like, I really don't think Vogt has done anything except for ruining our pitching staff the way that he's managed it. He's a rookie coach. He's never been in a situation as a winner, as a player. He's been got put on teams as like, ooh, look at, I got picked up extra. He's never been in this situation. We have a ton of talent. That's what's winning us our games. They're exhausted. He needs to bench players. And the front office is doing the same thing they did when we got Swisher, when we got Giambi, when we got all these other old like guys that put in the outfield that are crap with, but they have a decent batting average before they come here. Josh Naylor is 2-for-45 in the last 45 at bats. He hit a home run against Texas to put us up. I mean, Lane Thomas is poor. Was he like 1-for-60? His batting average. But the only problem, the reason you're not going to move Naylor down or anybody in the lineup is because we are in the top 6-5 with Naylor and RBIs, Ramirez back to back. That's why they're not going to make any moves. But this season,
do you think they should?
Because second place finish. That's what we need. Second.
Well, that's an interesting concept right there. But do you believe they need to be moved on, Will? Or he needs to be moved on? Okay.
I think Naylor's hurt. I think he's been hurt since he hurt his wrist, and they need to put Christmas over at first, bring in one of the outfielders from the minors, and bring up Angel needs to play short right now. And then you got those other dudes down in Columbus that are raking the ball. I'd rather take Straw right now, to be honest with you.
Well, let's not get carried away.
Will, thank you very much. Well, sorry, I had to let Will go. I apologize for that.
I'm not getting carried away bringing back Miles Straw. But, like, Kyle Manzardo, should he be here? Probably.
Well, Quincy Wheeler brought up the home away splits, but that was the only reason. That's a guy I respect who writes a lot about baseball right there. And he had brought up the home away splits because a lot of people are wondering about Manzardo again because, you know, right now up the middle, it hasn't been that good. Jimenez has not been that good. I tried to defend him a couple of weeks ago. He did have a 10-game hitting streak, but it looked very pensive and apprehensive at the plate for a while, and it has for a while as well. If I move Josh Naylor down the lineup again, I don't know what that does for his confidence. And you just had Will, who's the second person here in the last 5 minutes, at a bandy about the possibility of an injury with him. That is not good. That is not good because I don't want to push him down the lineup because I need a bopper in there because he's one of the few guys that can hit for any power of mine. But you can tell he's just pressing and he's swinging. Every single swing he has is a hell hack. And it's let's just go with the rhythm and the flow here for a second, young man, and let's see where it goes and get our wits about us. And it is totally possible, and I shouldn't keep denying this, and it seems like I'm ignoring him. I've just forgotten about him. Lane Thomas might be the worst trade deadline acquisition this organization has ever had.
Ooh.
Unless that they were, except for times that they were selling and they were just taking on salary to try to move on from guys. He might be the worst trade acquisition they've had at the deadline. I can't name one right off the top of my head.
I can't either off the top of my head. I'm trying to think.
He had a nice catch yesterday in game one. And that was about it. If I'm sitting there and I'm making those type of defenses here and there, we're not in a good place with this man.
No.
216-474-0092.
And the thing is, that was the move I liked. I couldn't stand that they put all their pitching eggs in the basket of Alex Cobb, who hadn't pitched, and Matthew Boyd, who hadn't pitched this year. Mm-hmm. Those guys have been fine. Obviously, Cobb dealing with that finger injury. We don't know when he's going to be back on the mound. Those guys have actually been fine. But Lane Thomas has been abysmal.
Coming up, you won't like hearing this, but you have to accept it. I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but you know you're going to agree with me. And it's too hot to have fun. Fix My Life next on The Fan.
Sometimes you just need a fix.
FML, my life.
My life.
FML,
fix my life.
Kenny, what do we do?
Fixing lives.
My life.
It can't be too hot to go have a good time. Heat advisories are out today. Extreme heat advisories are out today where there are schools closed in the area, a couple of the older elementary schools and things like that, a couple schools just districts decided to shut it down.
Buildings without AC and
yeah,
and
the ones
such, yeah.
The ones without AC, because you know it is hard to get the older buildings. You might as well just build a new building and try to get them AC ducts in there. So some of them are closed, and Owen was poking around some of the ticket sites. When we tend to lose a few games, some tickets end up being...
That's when I get to looking.
Yeah.
It's called value shopping, yeah. People.
Things aren't good. Every real estate person will tell you, when things aren't good, that's when they buy. They buy things.
Owen just lets the market dictate when he goes to games.
That's here right. You go. He goes to a lot of games. He does go. He
Unfortunately.
Tuesday's a good day for us. We don't have practice today, so it's a day off. And as much as I've been pissed at the Guardians and what's happened in blowing this lead in the division, am I okay to not only, A, go support the team in their downward spiral, it seems, and B, on a day in which my school district has buildings closed, can I take my kid to the game tonight?
Oh, okay. So it's too hot to go to the game at all. I thought it was just for you and your wife. I didn't know it was about the boy. You see, I don't think it's... I've never been in a situation where it's too hot to go to a baseball game. Now, I've got sunburn before it. Well, I get sunburned in the middle of winter, so it doesn't matter. I've got sunburn before...
You got sunburned at the Seahawks game the other night.
I did. I've been sunburned before, and I got it at a baseball game. But I don't think I've ever been too hot to go to a baseball game. And I've had a couple. There was one day, when I was in college, I took my girlfriend to this game. They were playing the Cincinnati Reds. It was a Sunday at 1, and I thought I was going to sweat through the shorts, man. I thought I was going to have the swamp ass going that bad. I was nervous.
Have you ever left a game because it's been too hot?
No. No. Like,
That's not been the sole reason I've left a game, but I've let that be a factor.
So that's been part of it. So I did a story for Cleveland Magazine a couple of months ago where I did the all-you-can-eat seats at the stadium just to see if they were, like, if the value of what you paid was worth it in terms of how much food you could actually consume. And I did it. It was a Thursday afternoon game against the Seattle Mariners. It was like 90 degrees. So I'm in there sitting in that section, eating all of this ballpark food, absolutely sweating. Like sweating
probably
through
the
my
day
shorts.
You don't want to be stuffing yourself.
Yes,
full of,
like yeah. I felt like I just wanted to go home and throw up because I was so miserable with how hot it was.
Get your money's worth.
Just about.
So is it
just about like I think the ticket was like $85 after fees and stuff, and I ate like $78 worth of food by my estimation, and you know I think at that point the team was worth the extra $10 to actually watch them play.
So is if the heat index is at like 90. Is that too hot for you guys to go to the game?
Yeah, I just I wonder if it's the wrong move as a parent.
I also think it matters.
No,
what? He loves ball. Ball is life.
Yeah, but you're sitting there watching the game. You can make sure he's hydrated. You can give him water. It's not like he's going to sit there and not be able to drink water at a baseball game.
It matters too if it's a day game or a night game. If they played at 1 o'clock today, might be too hot. But because that first pitch is, 6:40 tonight, right?
Yeah,
6:40.
Because it's at 6:40, it's going to cool down as the game goes on. If first pitch was at 1:10 like it was yesterday in the first game of that doubleheader.
Depends where you're setting, though.
It's getting hotter as the game goes on. That's when it might be too hot. I think if it's a night game, it's much more palatable.
I don't think it's a safety issue. I think maybe it's just a comfort issue. Like, I've said it was too cold to go to a spring. Okay. Like early season, if it's cold in the fall, well, you're going to a postseason baseball game, so that's part of the allure of it, the charm of it. But the spring, like when now that they start the season in late March, no. Baseball's meant for warm weather. Baseball's meant for sunshine and hot and putting on sunscreen. It ain't meant to go out there at 39 degrees and sit out there in a coat and those gloves. I hate it. God, that's what I hate. It's probably the thing I hate most.
Spring cold and fall cold are two different things, too.
I'm sorry?
Spring cold and fall cold are two very different things.
Because it's horrible. It's an extension of winter.
In spring, it's always damp and gross. And in the fall, it's like that crisp, cool air.
You're right about that.
I guess we're going to a game tonight.
Then. Go to the game.
Go.
Right. Take the boy to the game. I wouldn't wear a parka. But go ahead and go to the game and enjoy yourselves.
We were going to wear our La Parka outfits together. Matching.
R.I.P. One of the La Parkas. There's a couple La Parkas. People don't know that about wrestling. There's one La Parka who died, but there's another La Parka out there who's living.
little brother right here, La Parca, lives forever.
That's right.
Right in this heart.
216-474-0092. I got bad news for everybody. You don't want Jed Wills on that wall. You need Jed Wills on that wall. And I don't like telling you, and you don't like hearing it, and you're going to say I'm an idiot, and I'm going to say, yes, I know, and you're going to say he's a turnstile, and I will go, yes, but not as bad as some of the other ones. And I had people yesterday when I said that you need to accept it, that you need Jed Wills back over left tackle. They said no, and Bill Callahan would disagree with me, and I said, nope, Bill, he made Bill Callahan's job, while Jed Wills is a frustrating player and probably frustrated for a guy like Bill Callahan, he made Bill Callahan's job easier.
Right.
Because he didn't have the game plan as much around him like he had to do Jerry and Christian. And this is another part of it, is that when we talk about Jack Conklin coming back, I'm not sure about Jack Conklin. After the Seahawks game, I asked DeJuan Jones point blank about left tackle. This is what he had to say.
No, I probably couldn't. I ain't played left tackle since my sophomore year. But, you know, I can never write myself out because, you know, I never can know what I can do myself.
Just said no.
Basically.
He just said no. He started off and he said no. He just said no.
How much control do you think the players have in that situation about what position they play? How flexible do you think they have to be? How much power do you think teams have in those relationships where maybe an offensive lineman needs to slide spots?
If the player's good enough and he can't play the position, he can't play the position. I mean, you can always try. Joel Bitonio tried, and always legend has it that Joel Bitonio did a fine job. Joel is not interested in moving over to left tackle.
Sure.
And certainly not at this point in his career.
Right.
You don't want to take something you do extremely well, and Joel does it very well, and go to play a position where you're admirable or you're decent. You don't want to, on an offensive line, you don't want to take a very strong point and then average it out to average or even slightly below average because you have a hole. Sometimes you're forced to do it. But I don't think the Browns are in a position where they're forced to do it. And Jed Wills of the five offensive linemen, flatly I'll admit, is not my favorite of the five.
No.
He is the least favorite of the five.
I've gathered that.
And frankly, if you put, James Hudson looks like he tries all the time. There's times where I do think that Jed Wills will take a playoff. Flat out.
Yeah. Oh, but 100% would agree with that.
And he commits terrible penalties at least once a game.
He's not focused. He's not good.
But
he is average at best.
He's better than the options you have. And you're going to hate this. If he plays average at best throughout this year, it's more than likely they will try to sign him to some sort of an extension. You can rant and rave and get as mad at me all you want. But decent, even decent. I'm not saying good, because that would put him in a category that I don't believe he is. Elite offensive linemen are tough to find. Left tackles are tough to find because of the college system that's ran. And finding at least average guys. I mean, people were upset that you paid Jack Conklin as much as you did. This is before DeJuan Jones was ever a thought for Browns fans. People were upset because you paid Jack Conklin as much as you did. And I go, he had to. That's the going rate for these guys.
He was an All-Pro his first year here, too.
Yes, so you had to have these guys that they could help you. And right now, he's kind of got you by where you know where.
Because of the market.
Because of the market.
It is hard to find starting caliber tackles in the NFL. It's a difficult thing. And could the Browns, theoretically, if it doesn't work out with Jed Wills, or even if he's just average this year, could they draft the tackle in the first round next year?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is that the route they're going to want to go after it just didn't work out as well as they would have hoped last time?
Possibly.
Or would they rather just want to say, hey, you're fine. You're not good. You're not bad. You're fine in Jed Wills. We'll keep you around for two more years.
Because there were guys, as much as people deride Jed Wills, there are guys who are better. There's Tristan Wirfs.
Oh,
who
yeah.
is better? But there are guys who are worse. There are guys who flamed out after a year in the NFL. In that first round that you took Jedrick Wills in, there were other guys that were landmines in that draft with you. And you happen to get probably the second best or at least an average offensive lineman out of that, which is something that not a lot of people want to admit.
Just don't confuse that with good.
No.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.